So I'll give a talk on Cayley Path and quantum supremacy. Complexity theory has been a new venture for me as well. So feel free to ask questions. I'm happy to learn from you and hopefully you'll get something out of this talk. So, there we go. So we have quantum computers now, IBM, Google, et cetera. They're a bunch of good qubits. And the question is like, these near-term intermediate-scale quantum computers that do not have fault tolerance, they don't have quantum error correction, can they do anything that is practically impossible on any classical computer? And this would be amazing if there's a real exponential separation of some sort, because it would challenge the extended Church-Turing thesis, which says, you know, all natural processes can be simulated on a Turing machine. An elite candidate to demonstrate this and is at the is the experimental was experimentally demonstrated by the Google team is sampling from the output distribution of a random circuit. So these are some references at the bottom. So this is the so-called quantum supremacy experiment, and you want to show that sampling from the output of a random circuit is hard, but I'll say more about it in a second. Some basic terminology. This is called an architecture of a circuit. So horizontal, in quantum computation, horizontal axis is time, vertical axis is the number of qubits, and this is called an architecture of a circuit. So this is a placeholder for 1 and 2 qubit gates, because that's how we make our quantum computers. And once you specify the gates, so C1 to Cm, I'm using M like Mary for the number of gates. These little unitaries put at that place instantiate a circuit. So that's now a circuit with that particular architecture. And it makes it a circuit because instead of those placeholders, we now have specific gates. So it becomes a particular circuit. And we say this circuit is hard distributed with respect to that architecture, that's H sub A, which hard distributed respect to an architecture is as generic or as random or as average case as it gets. So we say this circuit is hard distributed if every one of the local gates respecting that architecture, for example, CK, is independently drawn from a random unitary, is hard measured respect to the unitary group of the appropriate size. So in this case, CK is 4x4 unitary matrix, pick randomly and uniformly. And like every other quantum computation, you initialize with all zeros, you run the computation, you measure at the end to get a string, and you want to show that sampling from the output distribution of this circuit is very hard for any classical algorithm, right? So that's the quantum supremacy conjecture. There's no classical randomized algorithm that can perform RCS, random circuit sampling, efficiently. Because of some standard complexity theoretical results like Stockmeyer, if you can sample, then you can quantify, you can calculate probability distributions of outcomes efficiently using a BPP to an NP oracle. That's a detail, but the problem is formulated as such. So what becomes our problem statement? So the contrapositive of that complexity theoretical statement is the following, which is our problem statement. You want to show that there exists an architecture A such that calculating the probability amplitude of starting from all zero states, running the full circuit and measuring all zero states, that this probability computation of it is sharply hard. And sharply hard means really hard. So it's like the counting version of MP, and it's really hard. And it's based on the complexity theoretical assumption that if you were, it's sharply hard unless, you know, the polynomial hierarchy collapses to the third level. But what you need to show is not just this. You need to show that estimating this probability to some small additive error is sharply hard. So this is the problem. The problem is prove that P0 of C to within plus minus epsilon, where epsilon is a very particular value that I'm intentionally not telling you right now to make this slide more digestible, but I will tell you what it is in a few slides. So you want to show this whole interval, whatever color it is, pink maybe, this whole interval is sharply hard. That is that particular value, some small neighborhood around it. Today we'll do that. We'll prove that that quantity P0 of C is indeed hard. And we even prove a small neighborhood around it, epsilon. But the epsilon we can prove is slightly short of what you need to prove the supremacy conjecture, which has been open for about 10 years. But, you know, it gets close, but doesn't quite encapsulate the whole interval. But it encapsulates some robustness. And by robustness, we simply mean that epsilon. Some amount of tolerance to deviations from P0 of C in estimation. So you prove this interval, P0 of C, with epsilon neighborhood, as shown here, is hard. Where again, this epsilon will be quantified fairly soon. Okay, so that's the overall view of the vista of what you're about to see. So how does one prove such things? So let's first focus on P0 of C, that particular point. A standard reduction argument that is used, you know, dates back to Lipton or perhaps even earlier, is that use the reduction, that is, you reduce the complexity of a worst case instance to the average case. So suppose there is a circuit out there that somebody proved is sharply hard to sample from, and this was actually done by Terhal de Vincenzo with a depth three circuit and other work of Bremner, Joseph Shepard, that they said there are some circuits for which calculating this quantity is indeed sharply hard. It's a very specific circuit, some particular architecture and particular gate, say. Then what you hope to do is to make the reduction work. What you hope to do is to deform the circuit respecting architecture. That is, every one of the gates you deform, maybe using a parameter called theta, some real valued parameter theta, that relates the two circuits. Then this quantity here will have C of theta inside it, which means what used to be the probability of the worst case will now be a probability of some circuit that's parameterized with respect to theta. So the probability will be a function of theta. And the construction, the cleverness goes into defining C of theta in such a way that at theta equals one, for example, you do recover the worst case circuit, like say Bremner, Joseph Shepard, or Terhal de Vincenzo. And at zero, by construction, it is such that P0 of theta equals zero will correspond to the probability of an average case circuit. And by that, one means where every one of the gates, instead of being that particular, the specific gates of the worst case circuit, will now be of a circuit of the same architecture, but every one of the gates being random, har, and independent. So from H sub A, as seen here. This relates the two circuits. And if P0 of theta happens to be, let's just emphasize that by definition, D to C theta to respect architecture. So this is done fixing an architecture. This is your worst case circuit. I hope you can see my cursor. And you deform it in such a way that your C of theta will be gate-wise deformed. So you have another circuit that's analogous and has the same architecture. At theta equals one, it'll be the left-hand side. And at theta equals zero, it will be the architecture of the left-hand side, but the gates will be from har unitaries. And you hope to be able to come up with a construction such that P0 of theta will be an easy function of theta. That is, you know, these two points will be on a curve that is easily specified. For example, by low degree algebraic function, the best example, which is a low polynomial. So let's, for the sake of argument, suppose we do come up with some construction of C theta that leads to P0 of theta being a polynomial in theta of low degree. And in by low degree quantum computation, we mean poly n, where n is the number of qubits. Well, if my polynomial is of low degree and at theta equals one, I've shown you what the construction is, but by assumption.
Ramas, I think, can you hear me? Yeah, I think it's just lagging a bit. So I'm just going to, it's fine if I just stop your video.
Yeah, as long as they can't see my slides. I mean, there's nothing else
to
see.
Yeah, so I think if I stop your video, there, and we can still see your slides. Hopefully the lag doesn't. Thanks.
Yep. Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so I'll try to use my voice more, less acting. So near theta equals zero in this interval delta, which is little o of one, say the width of it is one over poly, we're looking at circuits that are by construction very close to zero, very close to Har, H sub A. So these, they have the same architecture but random gates. And if the degree is low, then assume, to make the reduction work, let us assume that we have a classical efficient algorithm O. Let us just assume that can indeed calculate this polynomial in this neighborhood, very close to zero, with high probability, but suppose it can just do it. If you have a polynomial of degree D, well, it means it has D plus one coefficients to be specified, right? A zero plus A one, times theta plus a2 theta squared plus da 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 da, a sub d theta to d. And to specify the polynomial, it means you need to specify the coefficients. That's what makes the polynomial of degree d specified. So I can just call this algorithm d plus one times, so poly n times, and specify the polynomial, exactly solve what the polynomial is based on the values in here. And that, so you, I have theta I, P of theta I's, right? And I can just solve the linear system and write P zero of theta exactly and efficiently. Well, then I can just plug in theta equals one, and that's the solution of a Sharpe-Hart problem. But that would be a contradiction because I used an efficient algorithm and polynomial amount of work to solve a Sharpe-Hart problem. That's a contradiction unless, you know, the polynomial hierarchy collapses to the third level. So we conclude that there does not exist such an algorithm, O, that can efficiently calculate P0 of theta for theta in this neighborhood, okay? So that's the idea of the reduction here. So this shows that the hardness of theta equals one must be shared by some of the average case points here. So on average, these circuits are hard.
Ramis, yep. This is true for O, which exactly computes P theta I, right, so far?
Sorry, I did not catch that. Say that again.
So on this slide, you're only concerned with an O which exactly computes P theta I, right?
Yes, no errors.
Okay, got it. Okay.
For now, I mean, right. But errors are important. We'll come back to it. The question of robustness, that's epsilon that we talked about a minute ago, will come in. But for now, we're just talking about the exact P of theta. Thank you.
Sorry, Ramis, on that note, do you have to worry about your conditioning? Like if you exactly compute, but you know, you're always going to have some exponentially small error. Do you have to worry about ill-conditioned inverses of this polynomial?
So your voice is cutting, but you're asking me about condition numbers and the fact that polynomial interpolation is an ill-conditioned procedure, aren't you?
Yes.
Right. So that, when we're dealing with exact case, that is not an issue. But then as soon as there's a little bit of errors, so this goes back to the previous question, if there are a little bit of errors, the ill conditioning will get you, but it will come back. And the reason is that, you know, these are related to Van der Waal matrices and they're known to be notoriously ill conditioned. But I want to focus on the exact case for now and not get into what happens, sorry. How robust is an extrapolation.
So in the exact case, you're always going to have potentially some error, right? Like exponentially small, but you still have some error.
Right, but that would be an error. Let us assume there are no errors for now. So if it makes you happy, I think we're working over a finite field. We're not, but suppose we are. So things are actually exact. But a little bit of error is very real. You're right, and we'll come back to that. But for making the reduction work, the idea of the reduction I wanted to explain, I don't want to add any assumptions on errors yet. I don't want to introduce any errors yet, just to show you how the reduction works. For example, if you make this over finite fields, there is no little bit of exponential error. One is a one. And then, you know, it just goes through. Okay?
So one more question is, you transition from sampling to exactly computing P0 theta at some point.
Right.
Yes. Should we worry about that or is something that...
No, you shouldn't yet. So this is something that I try to, with a sleight of hand, not get into in the interest of time. But the idea is the following. If you can sample, if there is a randomized algorithm for sampling, with some small tolerance distance, then you can estimate these probabilities well. Now, the contrapositive is that if these probabilities are hard to estimate, then sampling must be hard.
All right.
That's okay. Why you can focus on these probabilities, and then you have to introduce estimation, hardness of estimation, which is related to that epsilon we're talking about. So calculating P0 of theta and showing hardness is not enough. You have to show that P0 of theta within plus minus epsilon is also hard.
Right.
That plus minus epsilon is the robustness that one discusses, which I told you I'll show you soon, but I haven't yet.
Got it. Cool. Thanks.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. So for now, we're just looking at that particular point, P0 of theta with no errors, no epsilon around it. Epsilon is zero. Okay. Just to show you how the reduction works. Now, so the key question is, how are we to make the deformation? How are we to make a deformation such that we have a low degree polynomial algebraic function, such that gate-wise at theta equals one, we have the worst case circuit, and at theta equals zero, we have an instance of a Haar gate. And Haar measure, it's a fact, it's translation invariant. So for example, if at theta equals zero, I have the worst case circuit gate, CK, times a Haar random gate, HK, so 4 by 4 times a 4 by 4, the result is Haar distributed. That's called translation invariance of Haar measure. So at zero, we want something Haar measure. At one is the deterministic case. And this here is supposed to show you the unitary group schematically. This is a path that is theta valued. And throughout the talk, capital N, think of it as the size of a gate. So it's like 2 or 4, all right? Size of the circuit is 2 to the little n. But, so the size of the unitary that's instantiated by the circuit is 2 to the n by 2 to the n. So there was a work, so I want to discuss a previous work. So there was a nice result by my colleagues, Boulan, Preferman, Nirche, and Bazirani, that did the following. So one natural way to relate these two points is using a geodesic. So grab every one of the gates, multiply it by a unitary from Haar measure, and then dial it back. And by dial it back, I mean, this quantity at theta equals zero, e to the zero is just identity matrix, do you agree? So we have CK times HK. So at zero, we have an instance of Haar, because CK times HK is translation invariance of Haar, is Haar measure. But at theta equals one, we have e to the minus I little h of k, which by construction, little h of k is defined such that e to the minus I little h of k is capital HK dagger. So it will be the inverse of capital H sub k, and as a result, you'll just have C of k at theta equals one, which is, you know, the input worst case circuit. But the problem is that this is not, I mean, the exponential function is not a polynomial function. So what they do is they Taylor expand this exponential function and just truncate it, some surgical approach to quantum complexity. So you just Taylor expand up to polynomially many terms and you just chop it off after polynomially many terms. The result is that theta equals zero, everybody agrees, but as you go forward, this goes back to these questions that you guys are, you've been asking me and poking at. So you introduce some intrinsic error, and we'll see that this error is somewhat serious soon. So you leave the unitary group. So as a result of truncation, what used to be a unitary gate will no longer be unitary. And among other things, it will have a small distance. I mean, you can take the order of the truncation to be really high to make this distance as minimal as you can, but there'll always be some non-unitarity and motion and error that you introduce. And as a result, the full circuit, which is made up of a lot of these little gates, each one of which veered off from the unitary group, you have a full circuit that is no longer unitary. It's the product of non-unitary gates, non-unitary quote-unquote gates. So it will be a circuit in quotation because it's not unitary. Specifically, remember HK dagger is e to the minus I H sub K. I put theta equals one. So we're looking at this quantity here, and you Taylor expand this. Without Taylor expansion, you just get C sub K at theta equals one. By construction, at theta equals zero, you have Haar measure. everything is fine as long as you haven't made any, as long as you work with the exponential function exactly. But this is not a polynomial. You do a Taylor expansion. Well, they do a Taylor expansion and then they chop it off after L terms, capital L terms, which gives you a non-unitary gate. I'm belaboring this because it's important. And each one of the gates will be deformed in this way and truncated, and you get the circuit. And to calculate the root of C, where C is from Haar measure, and then prove a little bit of robustness around it, where here I'm telling you what that robustness is. Every one of the probabilities is 2 to the minus n, because, you know, that's how an average case circuit, I mean, if you have a random circuit, the probabilities will be 1 over 2 to the n. So if you're looking at an additive error, 2 to the minus n is the amount of, is the expected value of a probability. But you want to be able to distinguish these probabilities from by 1 over poly n multiplicative, within 1 over poly n multiplicative error. And what they do as a result of truncation is that they're looking at the calculation of P0 of C tilde, where P0 of C tilde will not be this exact point, but it will be by making the Taylor series, you know, the truncation to be of higher and higher degree, they can make this P0 of C tilde to be somewhere near. And it will be, indeed, it can be made near enough to be within this interval. And then they claim a little bit of robustness about this point, P0 of C tilde. I'm calling it epsilon prime. Now, what happens is that although C tilde of theta, P0 of C tilde will be close enough to P0 of C, and you can prove this is hard. They prove that P0 of C tilde is hard. The little bit of robustness they claim, which is exponentially small in minus poly n, amount of error, it requires assuming that the classical algorithm O in the reduction, so it's what I discussed a minute ago, looking at that polynomial, looking at constructing that polynomial by evaluating it near zero. Remember, there was a classical algorithm we called O that took in the description of the classical circuit and, you know, calculated the P0. So for this, they would need to assume that that algorithm O does not take in a quantum circuit, but it actually takes in a non-unitary version of the quantum circuit that has that was truncated at exactly at the order that they want. So you need to make a reduction with respect to a non-unitary oracle or a non-unitary algorithm, which is unnatural. Now, another issue is that this would be fine if you could prove that although it's a non-unitary oracle, it'll succeed high probability on a unitary circuit as well. That is, like, doesn't hurt you much. But it turns out that actually it does hurt the robustness argument, as I'll tell you in a second. You'll actually need to make the degree of the polynomial exponentially large, which makes the reduction not work, because then, you know, you cannot assume an efficient classical algorithm that calculates P0 of theta. And there's more of this that appeared on a subsequent paper that showed that not only a degree of the, I proved in my paper that the degree of the polynomial, the degree of truncation would need to be exponentially large, and polynomially large degree would not suffice. John Knapp was my student at the time, later in a nice paper with Aram Haro, Fernando and others, Fernando Brando and others, gave a more sophisticated construction in which they show that no degree of, I mean, it's not just that it'll be inefficient, it just won't work in terms of if you look at a non-unitary oracle, it will not succeed in unitary circuits. So let me tell you what the problem is. So remember, we wanted an O that takes in a theta I, and by assumption gives you a P theta I. And this goes back to this ill conditioning stuff that people were asking me about. It happens to be the case that not only this point is Sharpe-Hart, which is the worst case. But even like within a factor of two, I mean, there's a neighborhood around the Sharpe hard point that is hard. It's a known result, not by me, by other people. So this point has a neighborhood around it that is indeed hard. So if you make a little bit of error here, so it's epsilon I, so you give a theta I to your algorithm, it doesn't give you P of theta I, but it gives you P of theta I plus minus some epsilon I. That's called the degree of, you know, error or the amount of robustness. You'd be fine as long as the corresponding polynomial that you build, which has some errors here, extrapolates to a point that is within this interval. Because again, you're looking at the point here that is Sharpe hard, so the reduction works. The issue, well, so how much error can you tolerate? There's Peturi's lemma that tells you polynomial extrapolation has the following feature. Suppose you have, before I get into the shortcoming, I just want to cover Peturi's lemma, which is independent of any particular result. So suppose P of theta is a degree D polynomial, and that you look at the difference of the exact polynomial with the approximate polynomial. So this will now be a polynomial centered at zero with some small variations, epsilon variations, right? Because I subtracted the exact one from the one that has a little bit of error. So this will fluctuate about epsilon near the points of evaluation, which by assumption is for thetas near zero, between zero and delta. And record that capital delta is 1/poly n. So this difference, once you extrapolate it to the point one, that little bit of error, epsilon that you had, will blow up by a factor of exponential to the power of 2 times the degree, times 1 or 1 plus delta to the minus 1. So delta to the minus 1 is itself a poly n. All right, so there's a blow up. So everything would be fine if this epsilon here, the amount of tolerance, the amount of error we can tolerate, was kind of is smaller than this exponential blow up. So we can keep P of one within the interval. So I want to make sure that this epsilon is so small, so small, that even though I get that exponential function multiplied to it, I land in this interval at P of one. So that epsilon has to be very small, namely e to the minus something larger than this. Okay, so this is our starting point. I want to show you why robustness cannot be claimed with respect to the previous result. By the fact that you make a truncation, you already introduce an epsilon. That is the little bit of error that you incur by leaving the unitary group. So your gates used to be exact, but now because of the truncation, you have gates that are not exact. They're a little bit off. M is the number of gates, N is the number of qubits. Capital L, recall, is the order of truncation. So the hope is that if you close your eyes on this exponential blow up, you can make L, capital L, large enough to dominate MN and everything should work out. That's the assumption they made. The issue, however, is that this D, the degree D, is not independent from this. This degree D depends on L. And actually it is, so L is the degree of truncation for each one of the gates. There are M gates, so that's L times M. This factor of two here comes from the fact that we're looking at probabilities and not just an amplitude. So I take an absolute value squared. So you see that now there is this positive competition of this exponent with this prefactor. And it's just simple algebra to group terms together. And you see that as long, so this is always positive, and I factor out an L. As long as this quantity, log of L, is smaller than 4m del to minus 1, this thing will diverge. All right? Well, everybody can solve this for L. And that shows that the L, the degree of the order of truncation of the Taylor series, would have to be at least exponentially large in the number of gates, which is usually more than the number of qubits, and times this delta the minus one, which itself is polynomially large. So there's always a divergence. And later, this paper I told you about by Knapp and others proved that actually it always fails. It's not just a question of exponential for any degree. They showed an impossibility result with respect to robustness. So to summarize, basically, so the proof of is not the actual problem, it's a problem nearby. And to make any robustness claims, you have to make an assumption, an unnatural classical algorithm. And no other robustness can be proved if you have classical algorithm that takes in a real circuit, not just this particular truncated circuit that you hope. So it's actually a pretty big assumption. And today, what I'm about to tell you will prove this particular point hard and a little bit of neighborhood around it, which is quantified, is not, you know, X sub 1 is poly n, but actually you can show that for Google type circuits is minus n cubed, for constant depth circuits, e2 to the minus n squared. So you see it falls short of what we actually need because, you know, minus n, so n cubed is, you know, larger than n. That's the reason it's a little bit, it falls a little short. But we will prove this particular point hard because we'll not leave the unitary group. Maybe it's a good point to stop if there are any questions before I tell you about the construction and the actual results. So I covered the background and gave you an overview of what's done.
So I do have a question.
Go ahead.
So I was under the impression that there were results about hardness for random circuit sampling that certainly people talk about, like this has been proven. So are there other results out there other than this one that you've been talking about, or is that just based on this paper?
So random circuit sampling, I mean, goes back to, I mean, the earliest version I know is Terholt and Vincenzo, and there have been other follow-up works like, you know, IQP circuits, etc. So in the worst case, it's been known to be hard, but the average case reduction, that is like proving that random circuit sampling is hard on average, that is for random circuits, goes back to this particular result as far as I know, and the permanent goes back to Arkhipov Aronson paper for estimation of the average case permanent.
Yeah. But I mean, so frequently, so I don't know exactly what the status is for the random circuit sampling, but frequently there's, in these hardness reductions, there's some sort of anti-concentration assumption.
Right. So that's another good question. So the permanent problem, the hardness of permanent this is a rich problem, right? So it's been 10 years that we're talking about supremacy. The permanent's hardness has yet another ingredient that is not proved, and that is the anti-concentration. The anti-concentration results are helpful because they show that, you see, what we want to prove is that the problem is hard to within multiplicative error, relative error. Anti-concentration helps you because then it shows that if you have anti-concentration, that multiplicative error is equivalent to an additive error. And for random circuit sampling, we have proof of anti-concentration, so it's okay to look at, you know, neighborhoods here and look at additive errors. For permanent, we don't have anti-concentration. That's an open problem. So it's true that anti-concentration has been proved that, you know, it's sufficient to look at additive error. And this goes back to, I mean, Harrow and a bunch of results.
So, but basically then you're saying that there's really no
there wasn't a hardness.
There's no kind of result that shows hardness, even with some assumption.
Average case hardness we're talking about.
The average case.
As far as I know, for random circuits, again, for permanent, we have some results, right? But as far as I know, for circuits, this was the first one that claimed it.
Okay.
Didn't claim anti-concentration, that goes back, but to actually prove the hardness of such circuits. that's why I worked on it, because, you know, I heard a nice talk by Adam Boulan, and, you know, I wasn't really into complexity theory at the time, and I saw him doing these truncations, and I was like, well, you know, Adam, would it help you if you didn't make truncations? And he just paused and said, yes. And I thought that was going to, you know, maybe solve the supremacy conjecture, because I was too naive and hopeful. But I started working on it and came up with this result that doesn't quite prove the supremacy conjecture, which has been open for over a decade, but, you know, it got us closer.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Any other questions? All right. So this is the reference. So it's called Cayley path and quantum supremacy. So Cayley function is a beautiful function. It's defined as such. F of x is 1 plus ix over 1 minus ix. The plus and minus can be reversed. It doesn't matter. So here, so what it does is that it gives you a bijection between the real line and the unit circle. If you make plus and minus vice versa, instead of going, so at theta, at x equals minus infinity, you'll be here, and it'll go around. This will be x equals 0, and it'll come all the way here at x equals plus infinity. If you change the sign, it'll just move in the other direction. So counterclockwise and clockwise. And you define f of minus infinity to be minus 1 at this point, because, you know, infinity is not a real number. And that makes it a bijection. And what you do to a normal matrix, for example, a unitary matrix or a Hermitian matrix, you do to its eigenvalues. So if H is a unitary matrix, it can always be written as F of some Hermitian matrix H. Why? Because the Hermitian matrix H has real eigenvalues, and F of H will have eigenvalues on the unit circle. And if you take the eigenvectors to be the same, this H will be a unitary matrix. And there's a bijection, so you can go from here and here. And F of minus H, if you just look at it, plug it in, it will indeed be H dagger. So it's the inverse of this unitary H. And the procedure is the following. So you have a worst case circuit, I don't know, Terhal-DeVincenzo or the Bremner-Shepard-Josa result, C1 to CM, there are M gates that specify a particular circuit with a given architecture. Keep that architecture the same and generate H1 to HM, which are drawn independently from hard distribution of the appropriate size. So they're 2x2s or 4x4s. It's easy and efficient to do. In case you want to know from a computational perspective, you simply do a QR decomposition of a random Gaussian matrix. Whatever. They're easy to, so it's also easy to generate M hard gates. And the construction is the following. So H sub K now, think of it as the kth gate, which is the average case gate, has an eigenvalue decomposition. Everybody knows this, right? Where H sub alphas are the eigenvalues, and these are the eigenvectors. Then define the path to be such. So C sub K of theta is the worst case C sub K times the harsh H sub K times F of minus theta H sub K. Let me just belabor one thing here. At theta equals 0, we just have ck times hk, because f of 0, if you recall, is 1 over 1. So it's not here. And at theta equals 1, I told you that it implements f of minus h sub k is just hk dagger. So at theta equals 1, it'll just undo this h sub k, and we'll have the worst case circuit. And then you plug it in, you do some algebra, and it has this beautiful property that it factorizes. H sub k and this f have the same basis. And if you plug it in, you will simply get p alpha of thetas, which are polynomials. They depend on the eigenvalues of h sub alpha. All you need to know here is that we have a rational function. You don't need to follow the details too much. This c sub k comes and grabs the eigenvectors. And these are just scalar polynomials. And this is an overall polynomial that normalizes the particular gate. So that's q sub theta, and p alpha of theta is defined as such. So beta is in n excluding alpha. That's what this notation means. The point is that c sub k of theta are rational functions in theta of degree nn. A rational function by definition is the ratio of two polynomials. So this notation means the numerator is a degree n and denominator is a degree n polynomial. And I like to recall that n is simply 2 or 4. These are very small degree rational functions. So every one of the gates will be deformed as such, as you can see here. And now we have ourselves a path that for any theta is entirely contained in the unitary group. It's a unitary valued path. Why? Because C is unitary, H is unitary, F of some Hermitian matrix is unitary. Products of unitaries is unitary. And moreover, the total circuit C will now be product of these rational functions, which are not just some arbitrary rational functions. The denominator is the same. You can factor it out. So it will be, since there are m gates, it will be mn by mn rational functions. So the numerator is mn, denominator is mn. And recall that we do the Cayley path deformation locally. So we respect the architecture. Worst case, and then theta deformed, which as theta equals zero, becomes average case. But we want the probabilities. So if this is mn by mn, you take absolute value squared, we have that says that p0 of theta is a rational function of 2mn, 2mn, and the 2 comes from the fact that they squared it. All right, so we have some rational functions that we want to, so instead of a polynomial, you see what we did, what we had to give up was there used to be polynomials that we used for extrapolation to point one. Now we have rational functions, right? Now the rational function extrapolation has pluses and minuses. It's more complicated, but in some ways it's more stable, especially when the function is irregular. But in any event, previously the results used for extrapolation was based on Berlikon-Welch algorithm because you want, so maybe since I have a little bit of time, I can say a couple of things. So you need your classical algorithm O to succeed near theta equals zero with a high probability. Why with a high probability? Because it cannot possibly succeed for every instance. Because if my algorithm is assumed to succeed for every instance, well, what if accidentally that instance happens to be the Sharpe hard point? So you can only hope that you have that capital O classical algorithm that succeeds in evaluating p0 of theta for some of the points exactly, and for the other ones, you know, it may fail. And there is a beautiful result from Reed Solomon. It's related to Reed Solomon codes, but it's called Berlikon-Welch, which basically says the following. It's remarkable to me, but the proof is fairly simple. It says that if you have access to a polynomial and you evaluate it, so you're given a theta and then you evaluate it, you get a P of theta, and suppose some number of evaluations are totally wrong. So T of the are totally wrong. So the P of theta you get out is just junk, but the other ones are exactly correct. So you have sufficiently many points that are exactly correct. What is remarkable about Berlikon-Welch is that despite the fact that you had some errors that you didn't know which one of them, I mean, you don't know which one of the theta i's gave you an error in the polynomial evaluation. Because if you did, you would just toss them. But you don't. But nevertheless, Berlikon-Welch algorithm enables you to exactly calculate the polynomial if you have enough number of correct points. But Berlikon-Welch polynomial functions. So we had to, so in this paper, I had to generalize it to rational functions. So it's a technical result, which is needed to make the, to push through the proof. So if you have some rational function that's degree K1, K2, and you have access to N evaluations, and out of these, T errors occur. So there's T of these points out of N are totally junk. And the other ones are exactly correct. Then if you evaluate, if your n is greater than the sum of the degree of numerator and denominator plus 2t, then you can reconstruct the polynomial exactly nevertheless. Just as this is an analogous result to the polynomial case of Berlikon-Welch. And another important ingredient that needs to prove is that this is another one of this is another point. So you see, you want so at theta equals zero, you're in Haar measure, right? This was by construction. If theta equals zero, your circuit has gates that are drawn exactly from Haar measure. If you recall, in the construction I told you, the theta is near zero. That is, this is within a delta, capital delta, that is 1/ poly n wide, which, you know, is close enough. It's very close. But what you need to show is that the little bit of relic of the worst case circuit is indeed small. That is, the distance between the circuits constructed in that neighborhood of zero is indeed, it indeed has a distribution that's close to capital H sub A, if you recall what it meant. It meant Haar circuits with respect to an architecture. So this is something that one needs to prove. It was technical, so it required some results from random matrix theory, like Weyl's values of unitaries, as well as some other ideas. But you show that basically capital H, which is f of h times f of minus theta h for theta small enough, is an operator that is O of root theta close into all variation distance to Haar measure. And by additivity of to all variation distance, if you have m gates, the distance is indeed something that vanishes for theta that vanishes as 1/ poly n. So it'll be m of square root of theta. So these circuits are actually very close to Haar distributed circuits. And yeah, this is another, so when you make truncations, again, going back to the previous work, the support changes. So it's not, one cannot make such statements as easily about the closeness of the two circuits when you're comparing a unitary versus a non-unitary circuit. So the theorem is that, you know, let A be an architecture such that computing P0 of C in the worst case is sharply hard in the worst case. Then it is sharply hard to compute some fraction, 3/4 prom 1/ poly n of the probabilities P0 of C, where now C is drawn from circuits with the same architecture, but Haar random gates. And this 3/4 is a nuance. I mean, it can be like 15/16 or whatever, some fraction, large fraction. And the little bit of robustness that I said we can claim. So this theorem right here is about the exact point. And very early on in the talk, there were a few questions. So now we're gonna talk about robustness. We showed how the previous scheme cannot give you robustness, meaningful robustness. But now I wanna tell you how you can get a little bit of robustness here. And the idea is, goes back to the slide that we had. So we assume an oracle that can evaluate things near zero, and you want to make a claim that there is some robustness with respect to a little bit of errors in polynomial evaluations. But since I don't make any truncations, this epsilon i's can be directly used. If you make this small enough, the Peturi lemma, which gives you an exponential blow up with respect to degree, can be tamed in that you can fully quantify it, and you get that indeed it's sharply hard to compute P0 over HA to within this much, some small epsilon that can be fully quantified. So it's not just X minus poly N, you can really write down a formula for it, which from what I recall is 2^-n². This should be capital theta, sorry, not big O, for constant depth circuits, and 2^-n³ for Google type circuits, which are root n by root n and depth root n. So this doesn't quite solve the problem. It's minus n cubed. What you really hope is 2^-n/ poly n. But you know, this is what we have so far. So let me tell you about some open questions. We know that improving the robustness, I mean, can one improve the robustness to 2^-n/ poly n? That would prove the quantum supremacy conjecture, which has been open for about a decade. The supremacy conjecture, oddly enough, seems to be false for constant depth circuits. So if you look at this paper of Knapp et al., they they make a claim and they give an algorithm. I mean, it is a numerical scheme, but they actually prove that a problem that has worst case hardness is on average easy for constant depth circuits, so small enough constant. And another question that I'm very curious about, and we'll be happy to talk to anybody who has an overlapping interest, is can this KD path deformation be used for other, for something entirely fresh and new, such as maybe quantum computing by interpolation or some cryptographic scheme, like blind quantum computing, where you delegate a task by giving something that is almost random to a quantum computer, then you get back a result, and maybe you can piece together the answer to solve your own problem. Because in the near term, we expect to not have like PC quantum computers, but you know, maybe a big quantum computer buried somewhere in New York, and then you can buy time on cloud to access it. And maybe, you know, you're a finance company and you want to mask and not share the circuit you want to run with the big company that you're running, that owns the quantum computer. So maybe it's a way to hide your circuit. And there are other questions, like, is there some optimality? I mean, in this paper of Knapp et al., it's interesting. They showed that, so I got to the actually exactly the point. That amount of robustness, if you try to get anywhere closer than 2 to the minus n squared to the exact point P0 of C, their algorithm starts failing. And somehow once you make it larger, it's an efficient algorithm. And there are other interesting mathematical problems that go back to approximation theory. Can we come up with ways to prove this problem that are not interpolation based? Because as was mentioned earlier and was brought up, interpolations are inherently polynomial interpolations, and also just algebraic function interpolations are inherently very unstable and ill-conditioned. All right, well, it was great. I hope it was accessible. So thanks a lot, and salute.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Vanis. There's a clap from me and Nick.
Okay, thank you.
For the rule of clapping as well. Okay, so we have time for questions. Are there questions from the audience?
Yeah, I hope I didn't talk too fast. It's just that when you give talks on a computer, it's slightly different.
No, the pace was very nice, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Okay, let me start with a question, quick one.
Yep.
So, in the KLE path that you told us about, a bit more generally, do you need the path to be always stay within the unitary group, or it's okay, it's only sufficient to be in the unitary group only in the start and the end? Like, do you need it to be
in the path?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I want the path to be always in the unitary group. That's something that was... Okay, there are two ways to interpret your question. Do you want to rephrase your question a little bit? Are you asking whether one can...
Can you get out of the unitary group in the middle and just stay in the beginning and the end? Because that's a...
Right. So yeah, as long as you can make the reduction work, that is, suppose you have some algebraic function that interpolates between the two, and near zero, it's average case, you should be fine. But you know, you gotta be aware, there's a few serious issues that happen once you leave the unitary group, even if you return back into it. Mm-hmm. And that is that once you leave the unitary group very early on, you incur some intrinsic errors. And those errors kind of haunt you at the end, if you wanna make any claims with respect to robustness.
Or the errors in O, you mean?
Little errors in, exactly. So instead of getting the polynomial, P of theta I, or rational function P of theta I, the fact that you left the unitary group has a little bit of epsilon intrinsic, irrespective of the type of robustness result you want to claim. That just comes from the fact that you left the unitary group.
I see.
So although you will land at the exact point, which is nice, there are other things that could go wrong.
I see.
So I actually wanted to stay everywhere in the unitary group to avoid all these things. And I made a there was another paper before this, Kaylee, which explored other sorts of paths, like one based on QR decomposition, etc. But I think Kaylee is the best.
Right.
In my opinion.
Great, thanks.
Sure.
So are there more questions? Yeah, Hakob, please.
Ramis, just I was very intrigued by your comment about this NAP paper. I haven't seen the NAP paper, but and I know your talk isn't focused on this, but this comment that if you get a constant depth circuit that's Sharpie hard in the worst case, then it can't be Sharpie hard in the average case.
Right.
Is that like a focal point of the paper? And maybe can you say something about
more about that? Are you talking about this other paper?
Yeah, this NAP paper, yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, just not to give a talk, but I can tell you a little bit. So no, the focal point of the paper is, you know, you want to know constant depth circuits are very interesting because they kind of are really at the, we know that log n depth circuits are hard. Constant depth circuits, we know, are in the worst case hard. And, you know, like in near term, what is log versus constant, right? I mean, I take a depth 50 over a log of a million, right? So they want to look at, you know, it's believed that on average circuits are hard. Like if you like a random circuits, they're hard. So they take a critical look at this assertion. And the focal point of the paper is that they come up with an algorithm. So there's an algorithm, classical simulation algorithm, that calculates, that samples and estimates probabilities for random circuits. And they can show that there are, so they give numerical evidence mostly, but they also give a very contrived example, which they can show is in the worst case, it's a small depth. In the worst case, it's hard, but on average case, it's their algorithm succeeds on it. And the point is that what you need for the Stockmeyer reduction to work is not just that the point is hard, but 2 to the minus n over Pauli n neighborhood of it is hard. And their algorithm can tolerate that much error.
So it's not necessarily true that you can't have a constant depth circuit that is average case hard. It just, in that example, you can't have one.
You can or cannot. No, I mean, there are definitely constant depth circuits that are hard.
Average case hard.
Well, I mean, average case hard. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, that's right. So the proof does not prove that all constant depth circuits that are in the worst case hard are on average case easy. That's not what they say.
Okay.
But they do find an example that is in the worst case hard and provably on the average case easy. And they have an algorithm that numerically succeeds on the average case of some of the known circuits that are hard in the worst case and constant depth.
Thanks for that.
Okay. Yeah,
sure.
All right. Yeah.